How does cancer get inside a cell? Let's suspend it for a minute. How does disharmony get inside a human being? I become someone who will gobble up in some way the cell next to me. And in the process of doing that, I destroy not only the whole, that is society, but myself as well. But this isn't just a cancer in society I'm talking about that is the people that are in jail or the people who are criminals on the streets and so on, who are the most virulent kinds of cancers. It comes down to virtually everything that you are, all the thoughts you have. The example I've given on some of my tapes is that if you're standing up here with an orange, and I were to squeeze that orange as hard as I could squeeze it, and I were to say to you, what comes out? You would all say, orange juice, of course. And the answer would be to why you get orange juice when you squeeze an orange. Because that's what's inside, wouldn't it? And you know that it wouldn't make any difference what instrument I used in squeezing the orange. It wouldn't matter what time of day I did it. And it wouldn't matter whether I was in Florida or whether I was in California or whether something terrible had just happened or whatever, that when you squeeze an orange, regardless of any other external circumstance, the only thing you get out is what's inside. You must understand that that applies to you too. The metaphor applies to you too. Even though you're not an orange, you're much more complex. And when someone squeezes you, that is, puts pressure on you, that is, says something to you that you dislike, that behaves in a way towards you that you find distasteful, whatever it may be, that you constitute squeezing or stress in your life, and out of you comes anger or hatred or bitterness or stress, fear, despair, you name it. It has nothing to do with who did the squeezing. Nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with what instrument they used or what time of day it was or any of that. It has to do with what's inside. And when you ask, how does orange juice get inside an orange? I just say that's the intelligence that's behind all form. And I give God the credit for that. Not thinking of God as something external to me, but knowing that there is an intelligence behind form that is absolutely, exquisitely, miraculously, unfathomably to us in our form, perfect in every sense of the word. It's a hard concept for us to get across, to understand that you can be perfect and still grow. You can look at a sky and say to yourself, is it perfect? And there can be clouds in it and it can, whatever it is. And you say, well, it's the only sky we have. What else would you call it? An hour later, it's quite different, isn't it? It's still perfect. Quite different. Changing. It's the only constant that everything is changing. And so what you do is you examine not how orange juice gets inside an orange, but how anger and hatred and stress and despair and fear get inside you in order for you to give that away. Because you can't give away what you don't have. So you can only give away what's inside. And what it is that puts whatever you are inside is pure and simple to me. It is key to understanding it all. It is thought.
Jealousy, anger, depression, fear, negativity of any kind are things that a lot of people spend a lot of time defending, and they're hardly worth defending at all. Most anger is immobilizing. You look back on angry moments and you would rather not have been angry if you had the choice. Wars are caused by angry moments and people responding with anger. Jealousy is a very interesting emotion. Jealousy is a put-down of the self. It is a reflection of self-contempt that a person has. You can't grow if you feel there's a lack in your life, because you're always repairing the lack, all right? And so growth is impossible. Jealousy means to take somebody else's decision to love someone else or behave towards someone else in a way that you wish they hadn't, and to assess that decision as having something to do with you. That's what jealousy is. If someone that I love, and I'm a no-limit person, if that's how I feel about myself, and if someone that I love decides to be with someone else, spend time with someone else, make love to someone else, I would never say to myself that that means there's something wrong with me because that person made that decision. I would look upon it as, how foolish could someone be to want to go out and get hamburger when they've got steak at home? To me, I would see it as somebody else's decision to be where they are, having nothing to do with me. I might make a decision if I were in a marriage or whatever that I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with someone who would conduct themselves that way towards someone else. I might. Or on the other hand, I might decide, well, if that's okay, I can accept that as well. If you're talking about sexual jealousy or jealousy in love relationships and so on. If you believe you're valuable and somebody else doesn't believe you are, that's the same as your reputation. Your reputation is in other people's hands. It's just their opinions. I am what I choose to believe about myself. And I might make a whole lot of decisions. Now, that sounds all very clinical, and it sounds like that's an easy thing to do. But if you understand and look at your jealousy and understand what there is to learn from it and what a great gift it is. I went through a horrible jealous experience when I was in my early 20s. And I was immobilized for 4 or 5 months over it and kept reliving it. And after I finally got over it, I made a decision about jealousy. I said, this is just a reflection of your own inability to love yourself, your own inability to love yourself. If you loved yourself enough and thought of yourself as valuable enough, you would never make somebody else's decision not to love you have anything to do with you. And I've never had a jealous moment since. I made a conscious decision not to be jealous. I wasn't raised to look at what other people have and be jealous because I didn't have it. I was never raised to look at the neighbor who got a brand new car and say, oh, that's not fair. They got a new car and I didn't. To this day, in all these years of my life, I've never had a car payment. I've never had a car payment because somehow I was raised, or I believed, that until you could pay for it, it wasn't yours. And that because somebody else has it, that's their good fortune. And I used to think how great it is that somebody else had something, even as a child, and never think that I should have it because they had it. One time I saw a beautiful car that I just thought was the most beautiful thing in the world. And it was my neighbor who had it. And I loved the color. I loved the shape of it. And I got this image in my mind of myself driving that car. And instead of being jealous that that person had that, I just started saving my money. I started putting the focus on the solution to that thing. And within a matter of months, I was able to trade in the car that I had. And I had the exact, and I had the color. I had it, everything. It was the car I think I was the most proud of ever in my life. But it had nothing to do with jealousy. Jealousy will just keep you from effectively going after what you want. Right, it's an immobilizer. It's not a mobilizer. Read The Life of a Cell. Right? It's a beautiful little book. And when you look inside of a cell, you'll see little protons and neutrons and little atoms, whatever, all the things that are inside this cell, whether it's a rhinoceros's nose or whether it's your ear or whether it's a hair or whether it's a piece of dust or whatever. Just assume it's you, a tiny little cell inside of you. What holds the cell together? What makes the cell stay together? Do you ever think of that? Why doesn't your nose slide off? Don't you ever think of that? You've got to start thinking of these things. How come your arm always hangs there, you know? How come it doesn't just fall off one day? It's always there. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. What's making these cells stay together? Well, scientists can't even answer that. They get to the thing that they call the source, that within every living cell, there's something called the source. A heart starts beating inside a mother's womb 7 or 8 weeks after conception, and we have no idea. It's a total mystery to us. Not a physician on the planet can figure it out. Where was that life before? Where did it come from? Where does it go when it's not doing that? And what made that heartbeat out of nothing? How does that work? What is that? And how come in that tiny little drop of protoplasm is everything you need? I mean, it's your elbows in there, that hair that's growing over here that you don't want anymore. That's in that little drop there. And you can't stop it. You can't reverse it. It's all in there.
the growth that has taken place in you. It's like it's all in that tiny little speck that you can't even see inside that cell. Life is such a mystery, this form business, until you begin to see that that isn't what life is. Like the person who eats the package and focuses on the package instead of the content. The package is your form. The real you, you wouldn't want to toss away, and so many of us do. Now, when there is harmony within a cell, within a tiniest cell you can find in your body, what happens to the cell adjacent to it? It cooperates with that cell, doesn't it? It cooperates with that cell. It doesn't eat it up. It doesn't try to hurt it. It doesn't try to destroy it. It is at peace. It is at harmony. And so harmony and cooperation become the essence of life. When there is not ease or serenity or peace within a cell, that is, when there is dis-ease or disharmony or an absence of serenity or arrogance rather than peace or aggressiveness, what happens to the cell next to it? It gobbles it up. It gets aggressive. It eats it up. It has no reference to the whole. Something that has no reference to the whole means that it has no regard for the whole. Like you have many, many life forms on you that are ugly. If you look at them, look inside your eyelid and study it, you'll see millions of little life forms. And then you magnify them. They got claws and they got teeth and they're in your eyelid and there's millions of them. But they have a reference to the whole. They don't gobble up your eyeball. You know, they don't say, I think I'll take an ear today. They don't do that. They stay where they belong and they have a reference to the whole. And they work in conjunction with or in harmony with the whole, as do all the bugs in the lining of your stomach and in your intestine and your toenails inside your nose. They all have a reference to the whole, but cancer doesn't do that, does it? So it will eat up each cell because it doesn't have harmony within. And what will it do to itself? It'll destroy itself, won't it? A cancer in society is the same way. A cancer in society is one of us who is one cell, who doesn't have ease within itself, has no reference to the whole, that is all the rest of us or all of society, and doesn't see itself as part of all of you, and it will gobble up all of those around it until it destroys itself, doesn't it? So what is the answer to a cancer in our body and a cancer in our society? Is to get harmony within. And when you get harmony within, you cooperate with the cell next to you in order to save yourself. Now that's just like a little mini lesson in metaphysical philosophy. Now imagine me up here with you making yourself into a cell for a second. So that you've got all these tiny little cells and this philosophy applies. But remember, it's all relative. That's what Einstein taught. It's all relative. Nietzsche said, all things being relative, what time does Munich stop at this train? That'll give you something to think about. But it's all relative. Is a tiny little cell, is it bigger or smaller than this cell that is you, this totality that is you? No. Not in a universe that is endless. Where does the universe end? Is there a wall there? Is there a cliff? Who put the wall there? What's on the other side? How thick is it? How far down does it go? I mean, how could there be an end to the universe? It's impossible, isn't it? Does it end? How could it end? And so in an endless universe, a cell this big or a cell as big as you, that's just a question of context for you. Very much like if there is such a thing as eternity and there's no such thing as time, because how can there be time in eternity? If it goes forever, what do you need time for? So in that sense, 8 hours of sleeping or 80 years of living are identical, aren't they? In a context of eternity, 8 hours of sleeping and 80 years of living are identical when everything goes forever. That really helps you to see what happens when you awaken. And so I'm asking you to awaken, you know, while you're here. And look at yourself as a cell. Now imagine we can all just stand back and see all of humanity, 6.5 billion of us, or 6 billion of us. Is that what we have now? And here is this huge mosaic that constitutes all of humanity. And it's a puzzle. And it has 6 billion pieces in it. But there's one missing. And you can get back far enough and see it. Where do your eyes go? Right to the missing piece. The totality of that life form is not complete without that missing piece, is it? That's how important you are. You make all of humanity complete. You are the I that is we. Just like the I that is we that is inside of your pancreas, you are alive with life all the different bacteria and all the trillions of cells and so on. And it's like you walk around all day long, you think, gee, I'm an individual all by myself and I'm an island and all that. And you got zillions of little things inside of you going. And without them, you can't make it. And when something comes along inside your organism that no longer has a reference to the whole, isn't connected to the whole, you're eliminated and so is it. Aren't you? Disharmony, then, becomes the thing that destroys us. And as long as you are in harmony and positive, and when people say, well, positive thinking is just a crock, it isn't in the sense that a positive thought keeps you in harmony with the universe, and a negative thought keeps you away from it. Because we are thought, and the universe is thought, the fastest vibration, we have the capacity to either destroy or create, and we're the only things that do. That's why we're different than a pig and a horse, because we have a mind. And that mind is part of the universal mind, that unity, that oneness. Is not any different. Like, I am as connected to you, but just because I'm 10 feet away from you, I am still a part of this totality called humanity, just like the bug that is 8 feet away from me down in my toenail, which seems so distant from me, but is still a part of me, is real as well. It's all one. So that oneness, that universalness, is not just some speculation. You connect to it all. And if all of us have harmony within us, gentle harmony within us, and we're flowing with the universe, it's just the most powerful thing in the world. And if you have that within you, then you will cooperate with the cell next to you, just like the cell in your body does. The same thing. But all you have to do is have harmony within you. Now, how do you get harmony within you? How it gets inside of you is through your thinking. So if you don't like the anger and the bitterness and the hatred and the fear and the stress that is coming out of you, you can't be putting responsibility for that on the instrument or on the external thing. You have to say, that's what's inside. And why did I put it inside? And if someone sends you hate and you only have love inside, then that's all you'll have to give away. And not only that, but you'll help diffuse the hate. It's really hard to hate somebody who sends you back love. It's hard to fight with somebody who doesn't want to fight. This cell, when it doesn't have this in it, what does it do to the cell next to it? It won't cooperate any longer. It will not cooperate with the cell next to it. It will, in fact, gobble up the cell next to it. It will destroy. That's what cancer is. Cancer is the dumbest disease there ever was because it has no reference to the whole. Therefore, it will start destroying the adjacent cells to it, and in the process, it does two things. It kills the whole, and in the process of doing that, what does it do to itself? It kills itself, doesn't it? So it's a self-destructive life form within a larger life form that has no reference to the whole and will kill the whole and itself too. That's what a cancer is within the system. It's gone amok. Somehow it's gone amok. Now, and it's one of the most ancient, if you study it, one of the most ancient and virulent of disease forms, cancer. It goes back billions of years ago. It's still there, as long as we have disharmony, until we understand that we're all connected. Now, you begin to see this, then you just all you have to do is make the shift over here and see yourself now as one cell. Instead of one entity with billions of cells, now you're one cell. You got to make that shift. And when you see that you are one of these cells, and that if you, of these 6 billion cells, do not have harmony within you, or ease, or peace, or whatever you want to call it, if you don't have that within yourself, then you are going to function in a certain way with the cell adjacent to you. And the way that you're going to function is you're going to see yourself as not attached to the whole. You know, you're not me. I'm not you. I can do anything I want to you. I can kick you. I can push you. I can give somebody a rifle and have you go shoot somebody. Whatever it is, I am not connected somehow. I have no reference to the whole. And in the process of being one cell who has an absence of harmony within, you destroy the cell next to you. And that's the history of this being called human being that you showed up in. And it is also being reversed. It has to. It has to be reversed. And unity is a part of the reversal. You can either be on the side of order or disorder in what you do, in what you live, and how you think, and everything about it. That's how important you are. Humanity is incomplete without you.
Before I started seeing the world as a harmonious, beautiful place filled with brotherhood. Now, there are a lot of you listening who say, yes, but what about all of the examples of the absence of brotherhood and the horrible way that people treat each other in our world? I would suggest that you really take a look at the facts and understand that for every act of hatred and aggression or racism or negativity in some way, that there's a million acts of love and harmony and goodness towards each other, and that there's a network of good guys in the world and a very, very small number of really abusive people in comparison to the number of people who are doing terrific and wonderful things. The problem is that the horrible things that people do to each other make the news and get our attention, and we talk about all the time, whereas we just sort of take for granted whenever a hurricane happens that everybody bands together and just everybody helps each other out. When any crisis arises, when we need to raise money for something that happens in the community or whatever, as a people we find the will and the way to make it happen through love and through caring and through decency. So I tend to view the world that way and believe that it's silly that we allow a very small percentage of people's crass behavior to dictate how we live and think. Even the whole problem with drugs and so on in the streets, to me it seems silly that we've allowed the streets to be taken over by 1% of the people when 99% of the people want to live together in harmony. And once we realize the strength that we have in those numbers, that we'll see those shifts taking place. In fact, I think we are seeing them take place. But I've noticed that since I have began to view the world that way and view people, even people who are behaving in a negative way or in an abusive way, I have a tendency to think that there's still good people who are acting out in a way that really isn't reflective of their divineness and who they are. I found that I hardly ever run into it anymore. I hardly ever run into negativity. I hardly ever run into people wanting to take advantage of me. I never think of people ever wanting to steal from me or take things from me or to push their way in front of me and so on. And it's almost like I have that expectation and it doesn't happen. I just don't see it. Or maybe I just have blinders on and I just simply don't see it. But whatever it is, it's like my view of the world has really shifted. So one of the ways to get people to treat you the way you want to be treated, I think, is to view people as good and decent and caring and important. And then to understand that your experience of everybody in your life is really nothing more than your thoughts about them. I mean, you can't be somebody else. You can't get behind somebody else's eyeballs and be another human being. So the only way you have to experience them is through your thoughts, through your process. So your experience of your coworkers and your husband and your children and everybody that you've come into in your life is all done in your mind. That's where your experience of them takes place. And if in your mind, which is your corner of freedom to have and to think any way that you want to, if in that mind of yours, you tend to view people as good rather than as evil. You tend to see the positiveness in life rather than being focused on the minority, the tiny, tiny percentage of negativity that's in the world. You're going to almost create that with your expectation. At least that's been my experience.
There's two words that are very important for all of us to look at. Stress is one, tension is the other. What are these things? A lot of people think there's stress in the world. It's my belief that there's no stress in the world. The world is exactly the way it's supposed to be. There's no tension in the world, as far as I'm concerned. If you go out into the world and try to bring back a bucket of stress or a bucket of tension, you're going to always come up empty. And you'll see, in looking at stress-reducing magazines and articles that have been written about this subject, that they have a whole list of things that are supposedly stress producers. If you move from one location to another, that's worth 50 stress points. If you go through a divorce, that's 43 stress points. If you try to quit smoking, that's 19 stress points. And if one of your children starts smoking, or if somebody leaves home, and that's this endless list of things that people use, and then they count up how many stress points they have, and that's about as stress building a concept as I can think of. The truth is that there are only people thinking stressful thoughts. There are only people thinking tension thoughts. And that learning how to think, learning how to manage your insides, is the only way to eliminate the kinds of reactions that you get in the world. If you think that this thing outside of you is causing you to be stressful, or this thing over here, or your in-laws, or your problems that you have on the job, or whatever it is that you come up with, and you think that those are things that are going to cause you to be stressful, then I can guarantee you that you're going to be stressful the rest of your life, because there's always going to be someone or something that isn't going to go the way you want it to go. The fact is that you, and only you, determine whether you're going to have stress in your life, and that only comes from how you choose to process your world, not how the world is. The world is just the way it is. And the people in it are just the way they are. They're all on their own path. They're all doing what they have to do. And how you process it, how you internalize it, what you do with it, is the total determiner of whether or not you're going to be a stressful person in your life. Bjorn Borg was asked about stress at Wimbledon on center court. How can you go out there and be so calm and play these phenomenally pressurized games and look so calm? And his response was, it's just hitting a tennis ball over the net. That's all I do. That's what I do. I'm a tennis player. All the rest of that stuff is something that the media has invented or that the newspapers have created. There's no stress out there. There's only the way I choose to think when I'm out there hitting the tennis ball. That's the key to making any technique that we use for the reduction of stress or the reduction of tension to work. It isn't the technique. It is how we choose to process it.
It has nothing to do with whether you have problems. It has to do with attitudes toward problems. I grew up right here in Detroit. I drove from the east side of Detroit to Wayne State University every day for 7 or 8 years, sometimes 2 and 3 times a day. Now, at one time, I was a lunatic when it came to traffic jams and how I handled myself in traffic. The traffic would back up, and right away, I knew it would back up, you see, because every morning it did. But instead of using that time creatively, taking a tape recorder, maybe writing letters, doing some of my assignments from class or whatever it may be, I used that time to be crazy, you see. Here it goes again. I knew it was going to happen. And you see people blowing up, and then they get down to the university or they get home and they blame the kid. In the meantime, the traffic just keeps getting backed up. See, what you learn when you become a fully functioning person is the traffic doesn't care. You have to really get that into your... Traffic doesn't care. Whether you're upset or not, it will be backed up until it no longer is. And that's it. That's all you can say about traffic. Now, if I get into a traffic jam, I've got so many alternatives other than to going crazy. Often, I'll just get out of my car and start introducing myself to the people on the freeway. It's a lot better than sitting there going crazy. Or I'll start writing, or I'll use my tape recorder to get some letters done, or the audio tapes themselves. There's so many of them. You can learn a foreign language, complete, beginning to end, driving to Wayne State University back in 4 years without ever taking French. You can know all French or Spanish, whatever, by just getting a cassette program from beginning to end. You can do that if you want to. Or you can take the attitude that this shouldn't be happening. Then you go home and you yell at your kids and say, what the hell's wrong with Daddy today? Traffic. Traffic got him. Then you can go home and have 3 martinis. Why is he drinking so much? That's the traffic. And, why is Mommy and Daddy getting divorced? The traffic. It was the traffic that did it, you know? How come Daddy's got an ulcer? The traffic did that to Daddy, you know? Off to the funeral home. How come Daddy's in there already? He's only 43. The traffic killed your father, you know? It's entirely up to you. And it is that way for virtually every single thing in your life. If there's one thing to get for yourself tonight, it is that you
are the sum total of the choices that you make in your life. You cannot control always what goes on outside of you. Not always. Most of the time you can, but not always. But you can always control what goes on in here.
It's like a volleyball game. There's a net between you and everybody out there. And the volleyball is this neurosis. It's got a big N on it. And somebody hits it to you and says, how dare you treat me like that? And then you have two choices. You can either take the volleyball and smear it all over yourself and defend yourself, or you hit it back. You know, you really are upset right now. You really are having a difficult time. You respond with the word you instead of I, so that you don't own it. You are struggling. You're having a tough time. You really seem like you're upset right now. And what you're doing at that moment, metaphorically, is you're just hitting the ball back. And then they'll hit it back to you again, all right? They'll hit it back and they'll say, but I told you you were supposed to call at 3 o'clock. And you can either take it and say, well, I don't have to call you. Who do you think you are? You don't tell me when I call it. And you can get into that, and then you own it. Or you can hit it back and say, you really wanted me to call at 3, or you're really upset with me because I forgot to call. Or you can, you know, simply say, I forgot, and I'll work at that in the future. In other words, you don't have to own any of it. You always have the opportunity to hit the ball back. Hit it back. When anybody out there is dealing with you in ways that are offensive to you, you can always hit it back. I've always loved this. It's a little story by a woman named Portia Nelson. And she was asked, as a group of people were asked, in a seminar, to write down her autobiography. But they said, you only have one page, and you have to write your autobiography in 5 short chapters on one page, the autobiography of your life. That was the assignment. So Portia Nelson wrote her autobiography of her life in 5 short chapters. And this is what she said. Chapter 1, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. The story of her life. And it's really the story of higher consciousness, and it's the story of manifesting. Being able to manifest your heart's desire, to align yourself and your intentions with this divine organizing intelligence that is limitless, that is inexhaustible, that is ever-expanding, that is abundant, that is all-providing and all-knowing and everywhere at the same time, is like walking down another street. To align yourself with that and to know that that alignment in itself is enough to bring whatever it is that has particularized, that is individualized, into the world that you would like to have show up in your life and align with the particularization of that divine intelligence that is you, that it's just bringing it all together. It's just a realignment. And it will cooperate with you. I was in Michigan, and I was giving a speech the next morning. Now, whenever I give a speech the next morning, One of the things that I do is I run. Of course, I run every day. Right? So it was very cold in Detroit. So when it's cold, I decide to run inside rather than outside. And that's a nice choice. I didn't realize I had this choice a few years ago. I used to always go out and struggle through the cold nights and all of that when I arrived in a city and had to do my running. Now I just take a pair of shorts and a T-shirt, and I run in the corridor of the hotel. Whatever hotel I'm staying in, there's nobody in there, and it's carpeted, and it's air-conditioned, or it's warm, or whatever, and I just do my running up and down the corridor. And I don't look in the faces of the people who happen to be coming in for room service. I just don't look at them because they just think that that's a very strange thing to do. But I don't run my life based upon other people thinking what I'm doing is strange. I want to do my running, and that's the only thing that I have in mind. That's the goal. So I was out there running up and down the corridor, and in room 226, there's this screaming going on. This woman is screaming at her husband, and you can hear the whole scene unfolding. And he was supposed to have been there by 4 o'clock, and he didn't get there till 6 o'clock. I could tell you the whole story of their life based on this screaming, because as it got real good, I would slow down going by room 226, right? Because there's so much material in hotel rooms and in corridors. I picked up a lot of good material. And she was upset, and she was screaming. And I had my watch on, and I was timing myself, and 8 minutes would go by. And she was still talking to him about how he had ruined her day and how she had to watch his kids. He had two kids that she had to watch, and they were married, but these were children from another marriage. I got all of this going up and down the hallway. And so 10 minutes would go by, 15 minutes would go by. I'm running out there for an hour and a half. Right? I'm preparing myself for a talk the next morning, and I'm getting all the material that I need. And 15 minutes go by, and she's still on it. Right? And then 15 minutes later, she's still talking about the very same thing, how upset she was, and how dare you, and you ruined my day, and there's not much to do in a motel, and you have the gall. You don't even give me the consideration that you would give a babysitter. You didn't even announce to me that you were going to. You just assumed that here I am, and I'm going to take care of your children, and you are out partying, and you're having a good day. And this is exactly the way she would do. And this went on, and this went on. 45 minutes later, she's still doing it. And by that time, it was clear to me why he didn't come home. Okay, I mean, who would want to come home to somebody who is going to just, and for 45 minutes, say the same thing? I wasn't into who was right or who was wrong. I thought about how there was a time in my life when I could have done the very same thing and probably did do the very same thing. I would get very angry at somebody in my family if they did something that I thought victimized me in a certain way. And now, at this age, at this date, this person that is talking right now, I couldn't be in that situation. There's no possibility for me to be in that situation. I couldn't allow somebody else's behavior, no matter how close they were in my life, to send me into this kind of a tantrum, this kind of anger, this kind of rage, this kind of indecency in terms of how you're treating someone that you really love who has just made a mistake or whatever it may be. I couldn't do that. And that's the nice thing about getting more enlightened as you move through life. The clock never turns backwards. Once you experience that nobody else can control your emotions, you don't get it because you've read my books or listened to my tapes or done any of that. You get it because you experience it and you go through it. Then you get to the point where it's impossible for you to go backwards. The clock can't move back. And when somebody else started talking to me, if my wife talked to me in the way that that man was being talked to, I would have so many available options to make sure that I wasn't treated that way, including leaving. Or certainly not letting someone just stand there and berate me. But I wouldn't even be in a relationship at this point with someone who would conduct themselves that way. And I also wouldn't be inconsiderate enough to not call. But whatever it is, I couldn't go to the place any longer where somebody else's behavior could have that kind of control over me. I would just simply see it as, this is where they are. This is what they've got to work on. I wouldn't say that to them because then they would say, oh, yeah, just give me some of your fancy psychologist stuff. I would just simply let that go. Well, that's how I lost my hair. Okay, I let that stuff just go over my head. It just goes whoosh, whoosh. You know, and enough times it goes over the top of your head, and that's how I feel that I lost it because I let it all just go right over my head. I don't own it any longer. And the beautiful thing about it is the way not to own it is simply don't think the way that you used to think. Don't process it the way you used to process it. Don't blame somebody else for your upset. I would have told that lady, if she were a client of mine, you taught him how you want to be treated. You see, you get treated in your life the way you teach people to treat you. You taught him over a long period of time that you are someone who is willing to permit that kind of behavior and that kind of conduct. So instead of being upset with him, look at yourself and say, what is it about me that I have allowed this person to treat me in this way? What do I have to change so that I don't feel so abused and victimized, rather than blaming the victimizers and the people who act that way? And when you teach somebody over a lifetime what you're willing to put up with, then they will go as far as they can with that kind of negative conduct towards you. So you take the responsibility for how you get treated in your life. Throughout life, you have to do that. You have to do it in everything. I have found that the ways to deal with people who are rude on the telephone is to let them know that I am not a person who is going to tolerate that kind of conduct. I have found that when somebody at a ticket counter or a bank teller or whatever reacts to me in a certain way, first thing I do is I say to myself, this is their behavior. They own this. All right? I try to remind myself of that instantaneously. This is their behavior. And I try to react with some kind of kindness. If that doesn't work, I immediately go to someone else or to a superior or whatever, or I leave that situation. I will not stand there and be physically or mentally or intellectually or spiritually abused by anyone, ever. Because I know that if you allow that to happen, it's because I have given that person permission to treat me that way. And it's amazing. Most of the time, kindness and love really works to get other people to understand that they can't treat you that way. But if it doesn't, then you have to go to plan B, and you have to go to plan C, and to plan D. And it all comes from this internal belief in who you are as a human being. You see, if you think you're so valuable that you should never be abused, right? Because you would never abuse something that was really valuable. Supposing you had a beautiful vase that was worth $50,000. Right? You would never abuse that. You wouldn't play catch with it. You wouldn't throw it on the floor. You would probably put it into some kind of safekeeping place and where it couldn't be damaged and so on. You wouldn't abuse something that you thought was very valuable. Right? Well, the same thing is true of yourself. If you think of yourself as very valuable, very important, very significant as a human being, then you would never, ever allow yourself to abuse it, and you wouldn't allow someone else to abuse it.
I had a client. His name was Lou Mastriani. He was a client of mine up in New York. And he came to me for 6-7 weeks of therapy, and we worked together. And after that, I just figured it was over. I was what I call a do-do therapist. You know, you got to go out there and do it now. You're going to just sit here and talk about your mother. I'm just not interested. It's just boring. You know, I got enough of that. I got enough problems with my own mother. I don't want to hear about yours, you know. But if you want to change, then here's what we do. And Lou wanted to sort of talk, and then we got to a point where he knew that it was time to go. These are the things that you've come for, and now you can change and work on them. And he was one of these people who was never happy. He didn't understand the great messages, and the great understanding that happiness itself is the way to live life. It isn't something that you're going to ever get. It's something that you bring to life, that success is an inner process. It's something you bring to life. It's not something you get from life. And so in the last day, I told them, I said, Lou, I said, you've always talked to me about how great it was when you were a little boy living out in Sag Harbor and how much you loved to go out to the beach and you'd spend your days at the beach and those were the greatest things. I said, I'm going to give you 4 prescriptions. And these 4 prescriptions I give you, you have to follow them to the T. He said, all right, Wayne, I'll do whatever you want. He always knew I was a little on the loony side. And Lou was sort of, we became buddies. So I said, you're going to go out to the, I'm going to send you out next Wednesday instead of coming here. You're going to take the day off. He had a furniture business. I said, you're going to close up your business for the day, and you're going out to the beach, and I'm going to give you 4 prescriptions. And the first prescription you're going to open at 9 o'clock in the morning when you get there. The second one you open at noon. The third one at 3. And the last one at 6 o'clock. Will you do it? He said, yeah. I got this from Norman Vincent Peale, who had told me this is a great technique for people who are sort of into that type A stuff and always in a hurry and never wanting to be happy but always wanting to talk about it. So I gave Lou these 4 envelopes and I sealed them and I wrote this in. And he went out till he was ready for his day at the beach. He hadn't done it since he was 9 years old. And he opened up the first envelope at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I had written in the envelope inside, I'd written the word, listen. That's all. And for 3 hours, he had to walk up and down the beach and just listen. Just just listen to the birds, to the ocean, to the wind, to all the beautiful things that the beach has to offer. Just be there in the moment. And he did that for 3 hours. And then at noon, he got to the second envelope when I had written in there, reach back. And then there was a poem that I had put on there by James Cavanaugh, which I have in my parenting book on raising kids. It's called Little Boy, I Miss You. God, you guys could listen to this. James Cavanaugh wrote it on his 45th birthday, the day his brother died, who was only a year older than him. Some kind of nervous, crazy disorder. Goes like this. Little boy, I miss you. With your sudden smile and your ignorance of pain, you walk through life and devoured it with nothing but misty goals to keep you company. You wandered through quiet woods with friends and you were startled by a shuffling porcupine. Your heart beat mightily when you chased frogs and caught one too big for a single hand. There was no time for meaning. A marshmallow gave it on a sharpened stick. A jackknife in your pocket gave you comfort when your friends were gone. A flower hidden in the woods behind an aging, shriveled log. A dog who licked at your fingers and chewed at your jeans. A game of football that you didn't expect. A glass of cider. A cricket's cry. When did you lose your eyes and ears? When did taste buds cease to tremble? When's this sullenness, this mounting fear, this quarrel with life demanding meaning? That mounting fear is leisure's bonus, and it's the pain that forbids you to be a boy, be a girl. I had Lou think about that for 3 hours. Reach back, and don't let an old person move in. Don't let a tired person move in. Don't let a sick person move in. Not into this beautiful form that you inherited. And at 3 o'clock, I had written on there, as he opened the envelope, re-examine your priorities, which I'd encourage all of you to do. Who are the most important people in your life? Who are they? What would you do if you had 6 months to live and you knew it? How would you spend that time? Who would you be with? You got kids and you don't have time for them because you're too busy? The cat's in the cradle. And a silver spoon. And a little boy blue and the man in the moon. Be with those kids. Teach them how to play ball. You're not raising grass, you're raising kids. Be there for your wife. Tell her how much you love her. Send love out wherever you can, and you'll see the success that you're chasing so desperately come jumping into your life. Re-examine your priorities. Walk as you talk. Be there for the people you love, and you'll see your business and everything else growing. And at 6 o'clock, I had Lou write the final envelope, and I'd encourage all of you to do it. I said, Lou, now write your worries in the sand and see how long they